Welcome to HN Pod, your daily deep dive into the top stories, trends, and discussions from Hacker News. I am Sarah, and joining me as always is Mike.
Hey everyone, it is Tuesday, June 23rd, 2026, and today we are looking back at the biggest stories that hit the front page yesterday, June 22nd. This is episode 435, and we have a really fascinating lineup today. We are talking about the launch of the new Steam Machine, Dino making a huge push into desktop apps, a massive donation to the Zig Software Foundation, a very passionate essay on privacy and facial recognition, and finally, a really cool head-to-head coding battle between the new GLM 5.2 AI and Claude Opus.
It is a great mix of hardware, software, privacy, and AI today. Let us kick things off with gaming. Valve officially launched the new Steam Machine yesterday. The announcement post on Steam shot straight to the top of Hacker News with over 1,300 points. But what really got the community talking wasn't just the hardware itself, it was how Valve is handling the rollout to prevent scalping.
Right, because if you remember the hardware launches of the early 2020s, it was a nightmare. Bots would buy up all the inventory in milliseconds. Valve is doing something different here. They are using a randomized reservation order over the course of a few days. There's no incentive to be the first person to click refresh. You just sign up, and they randomly allocate the initial batches.
The Hacker News comments really dug into the math and logistics of this. A user named T-Mortal pointed out why this is so brilliant. If you have a randomized pool, the scalper's share of the consoles is reduced to a simple fraction of scalper accounts versus legitimate gamer accounts. Since legitimate accounts vastly outnumber verified scalper accounts, the scalpers get almost nothing.
And of course, being Hacker News, people immediately asked why companies do not just check the shipping addresses to catch scalpers. A user named FDai said they used to run a shipping operation and would just flag multiple orders going to the same address. But another user, DHugger, who actually builds warehouse systems, jumped in to explain why that doesn't work at scale. In modern e-commerce, orders drop to the distribution center instantly. You cannot hold up the pipeline to pool orders and run heuristics on addresses, especially when using third-party logistics. Plus, scalpers use address jigging, adding fake apartment numbers or abbreviations to trick the system. So Valve's software-side solution of randomizing verified accounts is actually much more elegant than trying to solve it in the warehouse.
It is a classic case of solving a physical logistics problem with a smart software cue. I'm really excited to see how the Steam Machine performs in the wild. But speaking of software, let's move to our second story. Dino is taking aim at Electron and Towery with a new feature called Dino Desktop, which is shipping in the Dino 2.9 Canary build.
This got over 1,000 points, and for good reason. Dino Desktop essentially turns any web project, whether it's Next.js, Astro, SvelteKit, or whatever, into a self-contained desktop app. The big selling point here is that it's small by default, because it uses the operating system's native web view, but you still get full node compatibility and in-process bindings instead of the clunky inter-process communication you have to use in Electron.
The comment section turned into a massive debate about web views versus bundled browsers. A lot of developers love the idea of tiny binary sizes, but as a user named Echelon pointed out, targeting system web views can be a nightmare. They mentioned that while Tori works great on Windows, on Mac you run into older Safari engines on older machines that crash your app. And Linux support with WebKit GTK is apparently incredibly frustrating.
Yeah, Difa Bulich had a great comment expanding on that. They noted that on macOS, the only way to upgrade your web view is to upgrade the entire operating system, which requires a reboot. So you end up with 10 to 15% of your user base running ancient, buggy web views. On the web, you can just ignore 6-year-old Safari versions, but in a desktop app, that is a huge chunk of paying customers. That is why Dino Desktop is also offering an opt-in bundled Chromium backend. You get a bigger file size, but you guarantee identical rendering across Mac, Windows, and Linux.
It is the eternal trade-off in desktop app development. Do you want a 5-megabyte app that might break on an old Ubuntu machine, or a 150-megabyte app that bundles an entire browser but works everywhere? Having both options built right into the Dino CLI is a huge win for developers.
Absolutely. Moving on to our third story, Mitchell Hashimoto, the founder of HashiCorp, announced he is pledging another $400,000 to the Zig Software Foundation, which brings his total pledge support to $700,000. But the blog post was about much more than just the money.
It really was. Mitchell used the announcement to talk about Zig's strict no LLM contribution policy. This has been a hot topic lately, especially after the Bun Project forked Sig and started rewriting parts of it in Rust. Mitchell pointed out how quickly the internet villainized everyone involved. What I found so refreshing is that Mitchell uses AI heavily himself. He ships features with AI. His opinions do not align with Sig's ban on AI-generated code, but he still respects the foundation and loves the language.
He wrote this great line about how part of what makes the internet and open source great is that projects can be weird and different. They can set unusual boundaries and build their own culture. The Hacker News comments took this and ran with it into a deep philosophical discussion about truth and empathy online. A user named Trizoza praised the idea that it is okay to be weird, noting how social media usually mobs anyone with a different opinion.
Then it got really deep. A user named Armchair Hacker wrote a fascinating breakdown of formal truths versus informal truths. Formal truths being things like 2 plus 2 equals 4, and informal truths being things like the sky is blue. They argue that the vast majority of our online discussions are based on informal truths, which have fuzzy edges and can lead to false implications. When we argue about tech stacks or AI policies, we are often arguing about informal truths as if they are absolute laws of physics.
It was one of those classic Hacker News comment threads that starts with a programming language donation and ends with a debate on objective reality and quantum physics. But the core takeaway is really solid. We need more empathy in open source. You do not have to agree with a project's philosophy to appreciate the quality of their software. Sig is doing incredible work, and Mitchell's funding helps them stay independent.
Speaking of independence and boundaries, our fourth story was a powerful essay titled, "Never Give Them Your Face." It is a stark warning about the rising trend of age verification laws on the internet. The author argues that these laws, which are always pitched as a way to protect children, are actually building a universal identity verification system for the entire web.
The essay points out a terrifying reality. To confirm that a child is not present on a website, the service has to check everybody. So every adult is forced to pass through a digital checkpoint. And these platforms are not just asking for a yes or no on your age. They want government IDs, or worse, a biometric scan of your face. As the author puts it, you can change a leaked password, but you cannot change your face.
The security implications are massive. Every verification database becomes a honeypot. We all remember the Equifax breaches. Now imagine that, but instead of your social security number, it is a 3D map of your face tied to your browsing habits, sitting on some third-party vendor server. The author is calling for a boycott, urging people to just refuse to upload their IDs and close their accounts if a platform demands it.
The message is incredibly important, but what happened in the Hacker News comments was almost a story in itself. A huge portion of the discussion was derailed by people accusing the essay of being written by an AI. Users were pointing out specific sentence structures, like the cadence of saying, "it is not X, it is Y," or the use of em dashes, claiming these are telltale signs of LLM slop.
It was actually quite frustrating to read the comments because the message of the article is so vital. A user named Henchman21 finally pushed back hard against the AI witch hunt. They pointed out that these are just normal patterns in US English. LLMs were trained on human writing to mimic human writing, so of course they share patterns. Henchman21 asked a really poignant question. How are we supposed to write at all when nearly anything we write can be interpreted as AI-generated and shouted down in a quasi-ad hominem attack? It really limits our ability to have meaningful written discussions.
It is a dark irony, really. We have an article warning us about the terrifying surveillance state being built to monitor our identities, and the community's reaction is to run surveillance on the author's syntax to see if they are human enough to be listened to. But regardless of who or what drafted the text, the core warning stands. The infrastructure for global identity tracking is being laid down right now, under the guise of child safety. And once your biometric data is out there, you cannot get it back.
That is a sobering thought. But let's lighten things up for our final story today. We have a really fun AI benchmark test from Tech Stack Ups. They pitted the newly released GLM 5.2 Open Weights model against Claude Opus 4.8. And they didn't just ask for a simple script. They gave both models a single prompt to build a 3D platformer game from scratch in raw WebGL without using any game engines or 3D libraries.
This is a brilliant test because it forces the AI to handle complex matrix math, write GLSL shaders, manage a fixed time-step physics loop, and parse binary 3D models.
You cannot fake this with a pretty CSS landing page. The results were super interesting. Opus finished the game in about 33 minutes, while GLM 5.2 took over an hour and 10 minutes.
And the quality difference was noticeable. Opus delivered a really clean, playable game, where the character animations worked, textures loaded properly, and the win conditions functioned. GLM's game was rough. The character was missing materials, the hazards did not work, and the game had no real end state. But the cost difference was staggering. Opus cost almost $22 in API calls for this one run, while GLM 5.2 cost just over $5.
The most fascinating part of the breakdown was why GLM failed to fix its visual bugs. Both models were instructed to check their own work before finishing. Because Claude Opus is multimodal, it actually took a screenshot of its game, looked at it, realized things were broken, and fixed the textures. GLM 5.2 is text only. It cannot see images. So it wrote a hockey script to sample the raw pixel colors of the screenshot. It saw that there were green pixels for grass and blue pixels for the character and just assumed the game looked fine, completely missing that the textures were flat and the debug menu was stuck on the screen.
That is such a clever workaround by the AI, even if it failed. It really highlights the gap between multimodal models and text-only models for front-end development. But as the author noted, even though Opus won this hands down, GLM 5.2 is an incredible achievement for an open weights model. You can run it locally, it is cheap, and because the weights are open, no corporate entity can suddenly retire it or take it away from you. It earns a permanent spot in the developer toolkit.
Exactly. We are entering an era where you might use an expensive, proprietary model like Opus for the heavy lifting in visual QA, but rely on cheaper open models like GLM for massive, long-horizon back-end refactoring, where you just need raw text processing at scale.
Well, that wraps up our coverage of yesterday's top stories. From Valve outsmarting scalpers and Dino rethinking desktop apps, to the philosophy of open source funding, the fight for digital privacy, and the evolving landscape of AI coding agents.
Thanks so much for hanging out with us today. If you want to read any of these articles or dive into the comment threads yourself, you can find them on the front page of Hacker News for June 22nd. Have a great Tuesday, everyone.
We will be back tomorrow to break down the next batch of top stories. See you then.